This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Gianni Hayes. We're going to be talking about secret societies. And, of course, to a lot of people, the idea of their secret societies, that just sounds so crazy. And yet, well, if you realize that here in the United States we have between 2 and 3 million Masons, that five of our last 12 presidents have been Masons, who have sworn these bloody oaths to have their throat cut if they ever reveal any of their secrets, and have their tongue cut out and be buried up to their neck at the level of the sands of the sea, at the level of low tide. So when the tide comes in, of course, that's the end of them. And that's just the first degree. Things really get bad after that. And why any adult men would ever swear oaths of that sort, to have their chest cut open, their heart taken out, and if they ever reveal any of the secrets. And then, of course, five of the last 12 presidents were Masons. One of them, additional one, was a high-ranking de Molay. And the reason he was not impeached was because Bill Clinton's man in charge of Bill Clinton's impeachment in the Senate was a 33rd-degree Mason, Trent Lott. And by his own sworn oaths, he could not impeach the President of the United States, you know, if he was associated with Masonry. And that's why, of course, Bill Clinton wasn't impeached. But nobody's going to tell you that sort of thing. Six of our last 12 presidents have come from the Council on Foreign Relations, which originated in a secret society in England in 1891. And the CFR is simply just a front for that. But most people have never heard of that. And most people are not aware of the influence of the Rosicrucians or the Theosophists or Opus Dei or dozens of secret societies that are existing in our society today. Well, with us, of course, is Gianni, and we're going to be talking about that. Gianni, how did you get interested in studying secret societies?
Well, good evening, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
It's 11 o'clock here on the East Coast, so if I fall asleep, just throw some water at me through the phone.
All right, fire an ice cube or something. Go ahead.
I became interested in the secret societies back in, I guess it was 1984, when I was studying for my doctorate. And my doctorate including world studies. Knowing that, you had to have a background in current events, politics, philosophy, religion, and history. And I started to see this pattern coming together that showed that none of these are separate entities. They're all intertwined. And how anything is accomplished among these people who are in what we call the inner circle is that they belong to the same organizations. And you touched on a good many of them, but there are a lot of other ones out there, like the CNP. Now, I know that the last time you and I talked, and I brought up the CNP, you know, we had some discussion on it, and I did want to bring it up again tonight. And that certainly is a Mooney-backed organization, and it's a secret society.
Well, of course, I would have to disagree with you on that. We'll talk about that when we get back. Not that I certainly don't think that the CNP leadership has been taken over by people who are using a very good organization, originally formed as a good organization, to push a political agenda. Because I think with any organization, especially one constructed in that manner, it's so easy to take it over and then direct it towards your goal. And that is, of course, to conceal the truth from the leaders of the conservative Christian organizations. We'll be right back. Okay, will you go ahead and pick up the story there, Gianni?
Okay. We were talking about the idea of secret societies, and there are many of them out there. The primary ones, the most important ones, are the Illuminati. Yes, they are still in existence. The CFR, certainly the Trilateral Commission, Opus Dei, there are many of them.
Now, well, of course, the thing is that there are an awful lot of people, I suspect, in many of these organizations who really have no idea what the organization's about. Would you think that that might be true? In other words, many of the people within Masonry really don't understand Masonry.
That's absolutely true, and I'm going to cite you an example, and I think I may have mentioned this to you before. Is I met a gentleman who has asked me to write his book, and he told me while we were working on his book that he wanted to become a Mason. And I said to him, do you understand what that entails? And he says, well, I know that it's belonging to a special group of men who, you know, work together for the same cause. He says, no, you don't really know what it's about. I says, you have to take certain vows along the way. And those vows are to what the Masons believe is light, when in reality their light is truly Lucifer. And so I said to him, I want you to go out and talk to people who are ex-Masons. And he did that. And he came back and said to me, the people who are ex-Masons don't even want to talk to me, for they're afraid of losing their life or being tortured, and they have not been involved in the Masons in a long time, and they don't want their family to be in danger. This man changed his mind.
Oh, I'm glad he did.
Yes, but you know, he's kind of representative, Stan, of what a lot of the other people are out there. They think that these are innocent organizations, and some of them are. But when you talk about the heavy-duty ones, like the Masons, and the Priory of Zion, and the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Bohemian Grove, the Bilderbergers, Illuminati, we're talking major organizations that hold sway and power over all the countries of the world.
Well, I think that the one thing is that many people join the Masons because this is a way of getting ahead. It used to be in certain parts of the country, in the police force, you couldn't get ahead. You couldn't get ahead in industry. And if you, of course, were a Mason, you were to leave, well, you'd lose your job. If you were a Mason, you'd get promoted to the highest levels. And so there were always rewards for going along. And getting along, but you don't buck the system. And I've had the same experience with Masons who've been 32nd degree Masons who realized what it was about, and they're to this very day, they're afraid to talk. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we're talking about with Gianni Hayes. And Gianni actually has her own radio program. She's out on the front lines trying to awaken people to what's going on. Gianni, before we go on, why don't we just talk a little bit about you? You actually have a radio program. Is it once or twice a week?
It's once a week, and I've had the pleasure of having you on it. We'll have you back. It's on www.theamericanvoice.com. Every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock to 10 p.m., and that's Eastern Standard Time.
That's a beer of 5 to 7. That's great.
And there, I have a lot of different and interesting guests on. Last night I had on, and I'm sure you're familiar with him, Stan, I had on Lindsay Williams.
Right.
And, I mean, he just blew the socks off the listeners when he started to talk about the energy non-crisis. But the show has, it's a two-hour show. I have an hour, I have a guest on for each hour. So there are two guests a night unless it's something very special, and then I have one guest. I'm a 14-book author. I speak all over the world. I fell into something really nice, and that was I have an agent who books me on cruises. And I get to speak on cruises.
Oh, that's the sort of job I'd love to have. Although I couldn't really do it doing what I do. I'm sure you can pre-record your programs, but I can't pre-record 5 hours a day. Anyway, I'm glad you're getting the opportunity to do that and to educate the people on those cruises as to what's going on, because we have to reach people across America one person at a time, because they've been systematically brainwashed by the people who control the media, who control our educational system, control the great foundations, who control many of our conservative and our Christian organizations and who control our government. And as a result, so most people can't really clearly see what's going on. And if they do, of course, it's so frightening that an awful lot of them who do not trust in the Lord, I simply just want to ignore it, hope it's going to go away. The trouble is, it's not going to go away, is it?
No, it's getting worse, actually. And the more we uncover who belongs to these organizations and how they all cross over, the more frightening it becomes. I mean, men that we have for years believed represented Christianity, we're coming to find out that they're interrelated with the Moonies and various other groups that we don't honor as portraying the Word of God. Some of these organizations, Dr. Stan, people get involved in, and they don't realize on the lower levels what awaits them as they rise through the ranks. There is not really any one major country or nation or institution that is not in some way affected by these secret societies. In the Vatican, just as an example, it was called the PD2, and that was a Mason group.
No, that was actually the banking interest, wasn't it? It was a Masonic lodge that was involved with the Vatican Bank.
That was the one. And the interesting thing was when Pope John Paul I was named Pope, he wanted to get rid of the PD2. He wanted to get rid of all of this whole thing with the Masons being running the Vatican Bank and whatnot. And interestingly enough, he dies on the 33rd day of his reign as Pope.
And I think that's really so interesting that there have been several popes who've wanted to do the right thing. Certainly, I think Pope Paul VI recognized what was going on. He talked about the smoke of Satan circulating over the Vatican. Pope John Paul I lasted just 33 days because he was going to try to clean up the occult influence in the Catholic Church. And we actually have an interview with Father Malachi Martin, who tells about the election of John Paul II. What most people do not know is that he was not the first pope who was elected by the conclave. The first pope, first gentleman, never was pope, but he was elected. He had a majority of the votes. He went up to receive the or accept the appointment, and on the way, somebody handed him a little slip of paper and said, "If you accept the papacy, you will be, and your family will all be tortured to death." And of course, needless to say, he did not do that. And of course, they selected another pope. So those people have never heard the story. We actually have an interview with Father Malachi Martin in our 4-tape set. The wisdom of Malachi Martin. It's not the interview I did, but one my good friend John Leffler did. So you can see the satanic influence working at the highest echelon of the Catholic Church, but it's in the Protestant Church, it's in the Jewish Church, it's in every major religion and every major country, as Gianni is saying.
Well, and the thing is that what people don't understand is that I think on the lower levels of religion, whether you're Catholic or whatever, and I still think Catholics are Christians. I think that they do some things that are, not what I consider good practices of Christians, but I think they are Christians. They believe what the plan of salvation. The problems they get into are the rituals of the corrupt Vatican. And what people don't understand is that once you step into a lower level position of any of these secret organizations, you are on your way to your own death. Because they're not going to let you get out. If they let you get out, they're going to watch you every single minute. Because you know the secrets. The secrets then become disclosed to you as you go through. And this is what happens in Masonry. You know, it starts out where people believe that the light is God and they're going to learn the ancient mysteries, you know, and they're going to come out ahead, and they find out they're way too far into it. And when they start to have to take vows that are totally against their Christian beliefs, they look at themselves and they say, "What do I do? I don't want anything to happen to my family. I don't want to go on and take a vow to Lucifer, so what do I do?"
Well, I think we see the same thing in the Rosicrucians. And I remember we used to have a caller, maybe a decade ago, who was involved with Rosicrucianism, and he came on and he kept talking about, you know, the threats against his life. I used to think it was crazy, but now I'm sort of afraid that maybe he wasn't, and we haven't heard from him in a long time. But, of course, they have a major Rosicrucian temple over in San Jose. And everybody thinks that, gee, it's sort of crazy. It looks like a lot of Egyptian, symbols there, and these big lions out in front, and these heads look like the pharaoh's heads. But they don't understand that this is simply another one of the ancient mystery religions. And, of course, it has disciples who are studying the Rosicrucian lore all across America, just as their study groups, into theosophy. And they meet, and they meet regularly, and they study the writings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, searching for the secret message, the secret doctrine. In fact, her major work, her major book is called The Secret Doctrine, 3 volumes. You have to really, it takes a college course and a half to actually get through the secret doctrine and to understand what she's really saying. But what she's really saying is Satan is God.
Well, yes, she's very scary. She was a very scary individual, and she pulled a lot of people in. But she also worked very closely, with, as you said, Alinsky and some of the other ones, Crowley, very closely, and brought in this whole thing, this whole formation of Satanism in the form of the Satanic Church. So she was a big mover behind that, you know, through her writing.
She certainly was. I think she died probably about 1890, somewhere there, 1892, somewhere there. But anyway, she certainly was had a profound impact. Many of the leaders of the world at that time were her disciples. And this is what people find so difficult to believe. In fact, during the 20th century, two of her major disciples, names are fairly well known. One of them was a German fellow named Adolf Hitler. Another was an American woman named Margaret Sanger, who created Planned Parenthood. But the average member of Planned Parenthood, the average Nazi, never understood where Adolf Hitler got his power from.
Well, you know, I think that Planned Parenthood is a real kick. If people don't know what Planned Parenthood is about and they are being deceived, they better, you know, walk themselves to the library and read about it. Stan, here's the thing. All of this, And it blows my mind that people do not want to put this together, is that there has been a plan in existence since Adam Weishaupt, left his own Jewish religion, became a Jesuit priest, left the Jesuit priesthood, and became essentially a satanic follower. There has been a plan, a script in place from that time on to today, and will continue until they have decided that their plan is fulfilled and Christ is on his way, his second coming. The plan is very simple. It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. But people don't want to believe it. The plan says that every religion in the world will become a one-world religion, and many call this, believe it is the Unification Church. Others think it's something else, but the Unification Church has a lot of good points to it that make it the one religion of the world. It says that we will have a one-world government. Wow, we are almost there. And to do that, one of the things that happens is that we have got to get America knocked down on its knees in order for this one world government to come into fruition. And how do you do that? You scrape apart its economy, which they've done. I mean, look how many jobs our people are losing every single day. 6,000, 30,000 people. All along, we're losing jobs. You bring in people into our country, let them cross borders illegally, where we have to give them welfare and give them hospitalization. They're tearing down the United States. They have to do this, and they know that. The people who are behind this, simply because you cannot have a strong country, the strongest country in the world, fighting this.
Well, of course, the thing is that I really believe, Gianni, that it is our leaders that are pushing this move towards world government. However, they do not have the support of the American population, So they're going to have to, of course, impoverish them to the point where, and of course, perhaps another war. I believe it's coming. And out of the chaos that lies ahead will come the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Gianni Hayes, and of course she's talking about the Illuminati, but Gianni, actually these ideas of world government long antedated the Illuminati. This is certainly one of the major, more modern manifestations of this plan of the ancient mystery religions, but have you got back into the ancient mystery religions and going all the way back to Nimrod and this idea of here is, of course, uniting the world under the rule of Nimrod. God intervened and separated the races and separated the languages. And then we've seen time after time after time, people wanting to unite the world, whether it be Alexander the Great or whether it be a Napoleon or certainly Genghis Khan would have loved to have done that sort of thing. But, of course, bringing right up to the present time, I don't think anybody has ever done a better job of moving to unite the world than a man who actually died in 1902. But his influence still reigns in America today, a man named Cecil Rhodes. And I'll never forget going to South Africa and seeing his tomb there. Actually, it's sort of not where he's buried, but actually it's a memorial to him. And there's this great bust of Cecil Rhodes. And then engraved in the marble at the base is that poem, "The immense and brooding spirit still quicken in control. Living, he was the land, and dead, his soul will be her soul." And I believe that Cecil Rhodes' influence still is the dominant force, not only in South Africa and throughout Africa, but throughout the world today. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you and I both know Cecil Rhodes had such an impact on even our world today because he started the Rhodes Scholarships. And who gets the Rhodes Scholarships? People like Clinton. People who are able to follow what the secret societies want and to implement that whole theory of a one world government. You're absolutely right, Stan. Cecil Rhodes, I mean, he stands maybe even a notch above Adam Weishaupt in beginning this whole idea of a one world government. But you know, it didn't start in the United States. It started in other countries. It started with Rome. It started even before then. It started with Osiris and Isis. And we could go all the way back, the Tower of Babel. But the point is, here we are in the 21st century, and we are losing our country. And we are losing our country because a lot of people don't care, they don't understand, or they're just too busy with their lives, and they don't fight it. And there is the answer, is that if people saw how upset that the major, I guess the majority of Americans would be if they really knew the truth, they may step back and say, well, you know, wait, this isn't the right time. That's not happening.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, I think the major problem is everybody's thinks the battle is over in Iraq. I mean, they see what's going on over there. They feel very badly for the American boys are being killed and for the Iraqis are being killed. And then, of course, we have a feeling that maybe we're going to be expanding the war over there. And our attention is focused overseas. Without ever realizing the real battle for the survival of Western civilization is here in America. Because as America goes, so goes the world. And there is an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy freedom here in this country, to take us into a ruthless dictatorship, to collapse our economy, as you pointed out so well just a few minutes ago, and to destroy America.
But do you...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Gianni Hayes. And go ahead and pick up the story there, Gianni.
I was going to say, do you think we are going to end up in a nuclear war with Iran, starting with Iran, and it's just going to go way out of bounds? I mean, I can see horrors of horrors happening.
I think there's the potential for that. I think that whenever you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And when, of course, the First World War got started, it was a simple assassination of the Archduke of Ferdinand and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Never imagined that this was going to be a war that was going to lead to their destruction. After all, they began to threaten Serbia, and Serbia made all the concessions of the world. Serbia was willing to make any concession to avoid a war. But you see, the real forces behind this, which were Masonic in large part, both in Great Britain and on the continent, didn't want a peaceful solution. They wanted a war, just exactly as when we were going to invade Iraq in 2003, in March of 2003. Most Americans don't know the Iraqis offered to surrender. Saddam Hussein offered to go into exile. The average American has never heard that. How could that have happened if we didn't hear of it? But you see, the people who wanted the war weren't interested in a peaceful solution, letting Americans simply walk in there without firing a shot. They wanted a war. And then I think this war is going to lead to a confrontation with Iran and Syria in the very near future. And it could very well lead to a nuclear exchange. Because, of course, as we try to figure out what's going to happen, Gianni, we can't anticipate the future. But I think God can. And I think if we read Ezekiel 38 and 39, we can see whether this is going to be this year or next year or within a few years. But I think there's going to be a major war in the Middle East. It's going to involve Israel. It's going to involve all of the countries of the Middle East and our boys over there right in the middle of it. May God help them.
Well, and here we are facing the fact that the lunatic in Iran, if I may say that, who is saying that the Israelis never experienced Holocaust in any way, and, you know, all this inflammatory talk certainly is not helping relationships with Israel. So here's what we see is going to happen, is that Israel is not going to take this much longer from Iran. And we're going to go into Iran, and Israel's going to go into Iran, and as soon as that happens, we're going to see Russia coming in to help Iran, because they're going to be on the other side of it. And here we're off and running then on another war. We're in Afghanistan, we're in Iraq, and we're going to be in Iran very soon. And how are we going to do this, Dan?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things is NATO is going to replace part of our troops in Afghanistan, so we can pull our boys out to fight elsewhere. So NATO will be moving into Afghanistan, NATO forces there, and at least replacing part of our troops, which will free them up for other military activities. Why is it all coming together right now? Why is Iran threatening to open up their oil market there and begin selling oil only in euros here at the end of March? Why is it the Israelis are saying there's going to be a strike on Iran sometime in March? Why are gold and silver going through the roof at the present time? It almost is in anticipation of something big happening. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it forebodes terrible, as far as Israel is concerned. I think we saw here just this last day or so when Hamas, of course, has now taken over the Palestinian Authority there. These are radical Islamic terrorists. And, you know, so there cannot be, never be peace between Israel, and these people are dedicated to Israel's destruction. We're threatening to destabilize Syria, and if we do, it'll be taken over by a radical Islamic group. And I think everybody in the Middle East is frightened to death of where our policies are leading us. What most people don't understand is that Israel and the United States formed Hamas many, many years ago. Why would you do that? Well, I think that, of course, they felt that this would be a counter to the communist influence there. They did counter the communist influence, and now we have something even far worse.
Well, I think there was some miscalculation. When the United States backed the Taliban and the Hamas, they were not, hopefully, they were not cognizant of the fact that this very group was going to turn around and fight against us. The fact that Hamas won is a very dire sign. It's a situation that is the hot seat of that whole area. And, you know, we are nearing a point where when you see the Hamas group getting into office, it tells that the countries that elected them want to have bloodshed. They don't want to do this in peace.
And I really fear there's going to be more and more bloodshed in the Middle East. I mean, the radical Islamic movement was not a major factor until the United States CIA began financing it, and we're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Gianni Hayes, and we've got Tom calling from Utah. I'm going to ask people to hold their calls, but as long as Tom's on the line. Tom, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. I got more a comment. You were talking about, or Gianni was talking about, the major problem, you know, in America. I think it's the Christian church.
All right, fine. Why do you think it's the Christian church?
I'll give you an example. I have a dear mother that I love dearly. I tell her all this stuff, and we even had a dad who was very much into everything, Stan, that you talk about repeatedly. But since he's passed away, she just does not want to accept the fact that people are that evil. And she just refuses to even look at facts that I send her.
All right. Jenny, how would you respond to what Tom is saying?
I would say, Tom, I'm glad you called because you hit it right on the head. Here we have evangelists in our world that we've trusted for years and believed in, and we're finding out now that they are part of these different secret societies, part of these different groups. They are not there for you and me and your mother or anybody else. They're there for control and fame and to be important to other people. They are deep in their needs in many policies that are government related. They are supporting many of the secret societies. They have started many of the secret societies. So you're right. I think the Christian evangelists, and I think Christianity in general, if they don't wake up and understand what is happening, and that what I mean by what is happening, that's the very thing that you're talking about. Christians are part of the problem because they don't know what they're doing.
Well, you see, it's not really Christianity that's at fault. It is organized Christianity, and there's many of the leaders of organized Christianity, and some of them are wonderful people, and they really love the Lord, and some of them really know what's going on. But if they dare to speak out, why, they will, of course, lose all of their support. If you are a Christian minister today, it would be a very rare instance where you could get up and start talking about the things that we talk about from the pulpit without finding that there are people who had already planted in your church there to get rid of you. There are Masons planted in congregations all across America. You're talking about close to 3 million people. They've been told to join the Christian churches, and if anybody gets out of line and starts talking about the truth, you go after them. And this has happened again and again. So, but Tom, as far as your mother is concerned, there's a spiritual blindness there. Don't be angry with her. Just love her and pray for her and hope that one day she'll see what's really going on. And hang on just a moment here. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Gianni Hayes. We've got Tom calling from Utah, who is expressing concern because the Christian church is not leading this and not exposing the forces that are going on. He talked about his mother, and his mother will not believe a thing that he tries to tell her, and of course he's trying to tell her the things we've been talking about this evening. She doesn't want to believe that there's this evil in the world, and one of the big problems, Tom, is that most Christians do not believe in the evil. A lot of them don't even really believe Satan is a reality. It's sort of an abstract force. They do not realize what the Bible teaches us, because they're not schooled in the Bible, and that is that on the Mount of Temptation, the devil said to our Lord, "If you'll just fall down and worship me, I can give you all of the nations of the world." Now, how could the devil have made that offer? I mean, either he was lying or he controlled all the nations of the world at that time. And I think he still controls most of the nations of the world. At one time, he didn't control the United States. But I fear that his influence is very strong. at every level of our government today. And that's why if we want to survive as a free society, we've got to take America back. And we're going to have to do it one person at a time. And if your mom doesn't want to listen to you, then go to somebody else. And don't feel frustrated and don't be angry with her. Love her, pray for her, and hopefully something that you've said or something she sees will bring her to an understanding of the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged.
Yeah, she I think on one level she understands, but you know, nowhere in Scripture does it say to trust people and she or to see the best in people. But she just wants to do that, and she thinks about listening to Fox News and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, she's getting the truth. And we just, some of us in our family just kind of chuckle, but we do love her. She just cannot or refuses to believe that this evil goes on. And well, yet I present her fact after fact. I think this is not just her. I think it's the institutionalized Christianity in general.
Well, Tom, Janet, you make a comment, and then I want to tell Tom about my personal experience. Go ahead. Janet, do you have anything you'd like to say to Tom?
Well, actually, two things. First, how old is your mother, Tom?
Well, she's getting on in her years. She's over 80 now.
Okay. Yeah, that's a group of people that have a very difficult time understanding all of this.
You know, the World War II generation.
Well, absolutely. I was doing a presentation to a group of 100 people. The majority of them were veterans of World War II. And when I was telling them this was going on, I think 11 of them walked out. There were attorneys in there, and there were veterans in there. They don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear that they fought for our country and it's going down a drain. My father were alive today. He died at 48, but he was in a war, World War II, as a Merrill's Marauder. He would have a difficult time with this as well, because I know what he went through in the war. But here's the thing that people miss the most, is that the Moonies have such a big grasp on all of the evangelists in our country that he has groups, he fronts groups one after another, and he uses this brilliant, brilliant method of Hegelian dialectics to bring across what he wants. I mean, look, you know, Stan, you and I go back and forth on this a lot, but I know from research and from the fact that he has supported, and again, these are the established Christian people, he has supported Timothy LaHaye, Gary Bauer, Bill Bright, Paul Crouch, James Dobson, Billy Graham, Beverly LaHaye, Pat Robertson. I mean, we're talking, he funneled money into their organization so that they could get their ministries off the ground. But, you know, when you're dealing with somebody like Moon, you're dealing with an evil of its own. So who are they beholding to?
I think that you're absolutely right. And I think that many of our ministries have taken money from the Reverend Moon because he professes to be conservative. After all, he's funding the Washington Times, which is the only real conservative newspaper, one of the very, very few conservative newspapers in the country. The only question is, who's funding Reverend Moon? Who's funding not only the Christian ministries, but the Washington Times? So I think it's an example of the dialectic. You fund both sides, and then, of course, you control them both. So, I'm not challenging the fact that a lot of people have been, I think, very ill-advised to accept the money. I hope if somebody came to me tomorrow and offered me $1 million, if Reverend Moon offered me $1 million, that I would tell him no. I would hope that I would do that. I know my wife wouldn't let me take it, even though I wanted to. So, but let me tell you, Tom, about your mother. You know, I was involved in the battle dealing with the AIDS epidemic for many years, trying to address it as a public health issue to save human lives, motivated by wanting to do what was right and logical. And I had a good friend, Dr. Lorraine Day, who kept saying, "Stan, don't you understand? This is all about population control." I refused to believe that anything could be that evil. And, you know, this kept up for years and years and years, and until finally, I finally had to acknowledge I was wrong and she was right. The AIDS epidemic and so much of what's going on in the world is simply a matter of population control and mass genocide. But it's very hard to believe that if you don't want to believe it. So I can sympathize with your mother, and all I can say is don't get discouraged. Spend your time on other people. You know, we have to take the world back one person at a time.
Gotcha. God okay, bless. I'm going to let you both go.
Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks, appreciate your calling. Okay, and we'll go ahead and open it up and take some other calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in Monterey Bay area. But we really are involved in a great battle. It's being waged today. Most people don't understand that. Most Christians don't understand that. And certainly behind everything going on are these powerful, spiritual, truly demonic forces. And if you read what they write, they will tell you everything that's going on, exactly where they're going. And the average person has no idea that there is another dimension, that there are people in contact with the other dimension, that the writings of Madame Blavatsky were actually channeled to her by a demonic spirit named Kuthumi. The writings of Alice Bailey were channeled to her by a demonic spirit named Joaquin. The writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard, who is a contemporary, were channeled to her by what she calls the Christ spirit. And if you haven't read the original text of her book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, you need to get it. We'll send you the important pages where she talks about the importance of killing a quarter of the population of the world. And as she said, however, that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, for we are the writers of the Pale Horse Death. This woman ran for the vice presidential nomination of the Democratic Party in 1984. This is what we're really up against, the work at the highest echelons, not only of the Democrat Party, but of the Republican Party. Little wonder we're losing. Well, go ahead, Jenny.
I guess my question to you is, Dan, do you think that we are going to be looking at a female president, if it is Hillary, who could beat her, and if she does get in, what are we up against?
Well, I would tell you, I would far rather have an enemy that I knew, like Hillary, than an enemy I didn't know, like Condoleezza Rice or John McCain, both of whom have been selected by the establishment, and they'll have them batter back and forth. It really won't matter which one gets the Republican nomination. So they will give us a choice of two of their candidates. Right now, of course, they're pushing John McCain. Rice there, now they're pushing Condoleezza Rice for the Republicans. But at least if Hillary was in the White House, there'd be opposition. If Condoleezza Rice or John McCain would be there, why, the Christians would be right behind them. And it is the Christians that are backing, unfortunately, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and how a Christian can support an administration that will spy on our people, that will torture its people, that will cart them all over the country and send them to the countries where they know they'll be tortured. How can you justify that? You can't. But then, of course, why would we have invaded Iraq when they were ready to surrender? And those of you who do not know the background, if you'd like a copy of Michael Maloff's article of the Washington Times, he was part of the State Department. He actually was the one responsible for taking the Iraqi offer to surrender to the Defense Department in February of 2003 before we attacked. And we didn't want it. We didn't want them to surrender. We wanted a war. It was exactly the same thing, you know, during the First World War. They wanted a war, and of course you know how it ended. Austria-Hungary was destroyed, and the German Empire was destroyed, and the Russian Empire was destroyed, and the Turkish Empire was destroyed. And I fear that with World War III, which I think is imminent, why, the world will never be the same again.
No, of course not. I mean, the whole atmosphere and everything in the environment will certainly die. I don't even know how many people could survive that. It's a horrible, horrible thought. But, you know, when you have loose fingers touching dangerous knobs to set off, you know, nuclear bombs, they're not isolated. Their effects are going to be far-reaching. And it's going to be a very sad state of affairs for this country.
Well, I think all we can do, of course, is make our preparations and then realize that our ultimate fate is in the hands of the Lord. But we certainly have to do everything we can to warn others, to get them prepared. And if, even if they can't make any other preparations, they can be spiritually prepared for the very difficult times that lie very shortly ahead. I fear that we do not have a great deal of time, whether it's a matter of months or years, I don't know. But I've been following this for 43 years, and I've never... in many years have had the feeling that I have it of impending doom.
Well, I can understand that. I there are nights I don't even sleep. There are times, when you study this all day long and all night long and you write about it, you read about it, I mean, you actually do get depressed. So you have to pull yourself out of it. But you see it. I mean, they're the hallmarks. They're sitting right out there in space, and all you have to do is open your eyes up, listen, and find out what's going on. It's a situation that I ask myself over and over again, can we go backwards? Can we get the people riled up enough, not only in the United States, but around the world, can we get them riled up enough to say to the elite group of people who run all of the world, enough? You know, let us do it now as a grassroots organization. And I don't even know, Stan, if that's the answer. I don't even know what the answer is anymore.
Well, I tell you what, I believe our job, your job, and my job is to reach as many people as we can. Now, will they listen? Some will listen, some won't. I look at it this way. I figure that that I'm called to do what I'm doing. And the people who are supposed to believe and supposed to hear will hear. And that's the Lord's job. That's not my job. My job is to do my best to get the information out, and that's your job, too. But if you think that you're going to do it alone, or if I thought I was going to do it alone, I'd quit tomorrow. But because we are called to do what we're doing, we realize it's the Lord's battle. We're just simply to do our best. And if you look at it from that point of view, you don't get discouraged.
Well, you don't. It's hard, though. I mean, you know, people think that what we do is easy. It's hard. We do a lot of research, we do a lot of reading, we do a lot of studying, we do a lot of preparation of the guests who are coming on our shows. For me, my radio show is a ministry, and I know that's the same thing for you as well. And I think that is the bottom line. I think if you don't have a good relationship with our Father, I think that those are the people who are going to have the most difficult time getting through all this.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. Roger, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to ask a question. I want to see maximum scrutiny and reasonable charity. Would you have a good reason to be dismissive of the claim in the case of Beverly LaHaye and just possibly James Dobson, though I wouldn't know there anywhere, her claim that she was unaware of Moon's bankrolling various conference or sponsorship.
Yeah, do you want to comment on that? Then I'll comment it because I know Beverly personally. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I know from reading several books, and one of them is Dr. Kathy Burns, who's been very highly honored for her research looking into Mooney money, and this is also in regards to Billy Graham, but I think with Beverly LaHaye, I think that was an organization that she first started for women. And
that was Concerned Women for America, right?
Right. There was a name before that for it. Was it Federated Women or Women Federation for World Peace, which at some point became Concerned Women for America. But the Council for National Policy, which I've been trying to tell you about, you know, has many of these people, including Beverly LaHaye and Tim LaHaye, they are members of this. They are many of the leaders of this thing, and this is a front for a Mooney organization.
No. There I disagree with you, because I belonged to the council for a decade, and I disagree with the policies that it's taken. It was originally formed as a counter to the Council on Foreign Relations. It's become a cheering section for the Council on Foreign Relations and the Project for the New American Century, but whether it was originally formed for, I honestly believe that the original purpose was to counter the bad guys, and unfortunately, the bad guys took it over.
Well, but you also have to remember the, where the money comes from. I mean, Moon is the one who did put up the money.
Now, do you know that he put up for the ECMT? I know he'd given a gift to Beverly LeHay, and I think that sometimes people are ill-advised. If somebody wants to give you a lot of money, it's very hard to say no. I think you should. I think that was a terrible mistake. I don't know not know about the funding of Dobson. I hope he didn't take money, but there too, again, a good, I believe he's a good man. I believe Beverly LeHay and Tim LeHay both love the Lord. I think they're wonderful people, but I think that sometimes good people can make mistakes. Haven't you ever made a mistake?
Well, of course I have. I mean,
I'm sorry for that.
I'm not criticizing anybody, but I'm saying that the caller asked us about the whole idea of the Moonies being involved, the Unification Church being involved in this. And, you know, when you lay out all the research and you look at the research and you say, uh-huh, so the Council on National Policy and the Family Research Council and the American Coalition for Traditional Values, and even the Templeton Prize, and many of all of those...
No, especially the Templeton Prize.
...have been subsidized by Sun Young Moon, then you know that may be the whole point of a one-world religion. It would come from the unification.
Well, now, I thought that John Templeton put up the money for the Templeton Prize, but John Templeton is into the occult, and certainly... Who funded Sun Young Moon? I mean, he's probably put $100 million into the Washington Times. I mean, where do you get $100 million to subsidize a conservative newspaper in the nation's capital? Well, of course, the one thing is that the Washington Times will never tell you the truth. It will give you the other side from the liberal side, but you have to understand they control the liberal side, they control the conservative side. It's all manipulated. Our reality is created by Sun Moon on one side and the Washington Post, which comes to the Bilderbergers, on the other. Which bad side, which misinformation do you want? We'll be right back here. Well, let's go to George, who's calling from Toronto. Hi, George. How are you doing? I'm doing just fine.
Thank you. First of all, before I ask my question, I just want to say that here in Canada, we just had an election, and we had a gentleman by the name of Stephen Harper ready to become our new prime minister, and he happened to be invited to the Bilderberger meetings a few years back.
Isn't that a coincidence?
Isn't that a coincidence? Yes, absolutely.
You know, I've never been invited to the Bilderberger meetings. I don't know why.
Neither have I.
Me neither.
Go ahead,
my
George.
Question is this. For quite a few years now, I hear all the issues of torture by the U.S. government. I hear all these things taking place that are negative. And I sit back and I go, what's wrong with this picture? All I can picture in my mind is the demonization of the American government. And I just can't help but think that there's something in the works over a long period of time when the American government is being set up for control by the United Nations.
We are setting the United Nations up to control. I believe that America is the major force behind the United Nations, and the spirit behind the United Nations is truly demonic. So you're absolutely right.
Well, now you said it's the old families of Europe and America behind the United Nations.
Well, but the major force behind the United Nations today is the United States, but certainly the royal families of Europe are behind this as well, the Club of Rome. All of these royal families are intermarried. Gianni, why don't you get your thoughts in here, because we're almost out of time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye, George. How would you respond to George there?
The United Nations is going to be the ruination of the United States. And, of course, we were one of the forerunners of putting the United Nations in there. The old family, the elite, the wealthy, the royalty, they're all part of the UN. They want the UN to be the central governing authority of all the world. And you know what that sets us up for? That sets us up for that panel that they talk about. It'll be a panel of 10 different people representing 10 different areas of our globe. that would then have one person they report to who was a tyrant, the Antichrist. And, you know, the UN, everybody wants to get out of the UN. They neglect to say, though, that the United States is one of the big ones in establishing it, though.
And, Doc, we are the major force. The United Nations is centered right here in the United States. We pick up 20% of the cost. We'll be right back in just a moment with Gianni. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we could go on for several hours, but it's getting late back there for Gianni. Gianni, let's get your website out so people will know how to reach you.
I have several websites. One is www.creative-services.biz, B-I-Z. It's creative, then there's the hyphen, services.biz, and then my other site...
No, what's the last word, dot what?
Biz, B-I-Z.
Biz, okay, fine.
And the other site, which is more my Christian and patriotic site, is www.thenazarzine.com, and that's N-A-Z-A-R-Z-I-N-E. And so those are my two main sites.
All right, fine, we're going to have to let you go. Do you have a telephone number you'd like to get out before I let you go?
Yes, people are welcome to call me on 410-543-0448 and to listen to my show on Wednesday nights, and because I'm going to have you back on, Stan.
Go ahead. Go get your, how can they get your program on Wednesday night?
They just go www.theamericanvoice.com, and when they pull that page up, they get to pick a server. It doesn't matter which one they pick, and when they listen, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, my voice will come right up.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Gianni.
Thank you for having me, Dr.
It's always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. That's Gianni Hayes, and she's right on the front lines of this battle of reaching people, and all sorts of people are out there doing the best that they can. Every one of us has an obligation to be involved in this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and women and the survival of Western civilization, and we truly are involved in a spiritual war that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And there really are spiritual beings out there that are in contact with the other dimension. There are people who, of course, contact the other dimension and are controlled by the other dimension. The ultimate goal, a one-world government and a new world religion. And our job, here we are, just little human beings out there trying to do our best in this great cosmic battle that's taking place today. But of course, I believe that the Lord will allow us to accomplish what we're supposed to accomplish. But if we do nothing, then we dishonor Him. So certainly we ask you to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs. You can pull down our newsletters. You can look at all the various tape sets and pamphlets and videos and the four tape sets that we have, books. And then, of course, we certainly ask you to tell others about our radio programs to encourage them to listen. And we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us financially as we try to maintain our network of 60 stations, 60 outlets every week out across America. And we're reaching more and more people. It takes a long time before you can build a base of support. And with our Here's Help radio network, we're fortunate to be on here, but we do hope many of you listening will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you are listening on Here's Help, remember that every noon, I think it's 12:30 every Saturday in the Central Time, why our programs are broadcast on the Here's Help radio network station. So please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line, Bill Dumas. And he's going to be talking about a DVD he's put together called Missing Presumed Dead. And we actually carry the DVD because we think it's a very important story. It's the story of what happened to one young man who was abandoned during the Korean War. He was abandoned by the government he went overseas to fight for. He really thought he was going to Korea to fight for America. Oh, he had to defend his country. He didn't understand that there were truly the wicked forces working at the highest echelons of the government that were intent upon betraying him and working with the North Koreans to facilitate that. It's very, very difficult for people to understand the Korean War unless you read MacArthur's reminiscences, and you find out that during the Korean War, the United States Navy, the 7th Fleet, was stationed between Taiwan, or Formosa, as it was known at that time, and the mainland, not to keep the Chinese communists from invading Formosa, Taiwan, but to keep Taiwan from invading the Chinese mainland, so they could release then two gigantic Chinese armies to move up into Manchuria and then down into North Korea to kill our men. Now, why would the Chinese communists pull their troops off the mainland? They were guarding it to protect the mainland from invasion by the Chinese communists, unless they were sure that the American government would keep the 7th Fleet there to protect them. In other words, they couldn't protect themselves. The nationalist Chinese, now fully armed and ready, could have attacked the mainland and maybe taken communist China back, but the Koreans knew they had nothing to worry about. If you read MacArthur's reminiscences, you'll see he reproduces a directive put out by General Lin Piao, the head of the Chinese Communist Army that attacked in North Korea and killed so many American boys, and said, you know, I would never risk my troops and my military reputation and attack the Americans if it had not been guaranteed that Washington restrained General MacArthur from taking action against my lines of supply. In other words, it was all slam dunk. General MacArthur didn't understand there were secret agreements between the leaders of our country and Communist China that it was never a real war. Well, anyway, well, that is the background. Bill Dumont, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you and how you got involved in this, this making this DVD that's taken you, really, what, a couple of years?
Yes, Dr. Stan. It actually took about 3.5 years to finish it.
All right, go ahead.
What it basically started out to be was a film about my uncle Bob trying to find out what happened to his brother Roger, who was missing in action in the Korean War. Very early on in the war, when the Chinese entered the war, Roger disappeared. And Bob served two tours of duty in Korea trying to find Roger. And when there was no word that what happened to Roger after the war ended, Roger, along with over 8,000 MIAs, were automatically classified missing, presumed dead. But Bob just kept looking. When he left Korea, he just kept up the search for his brother.
And of course, the thing is, they were abandoned by our government. They were betrayed. They were men who went overseas to fight for our government, and they were betrayed by the government. Our government knew where they were, and they've been doing everything they can for well over 50 years to conceal the truth about their fate from the American people. And you're going to learn a lot more as Bill Dumas tells you the story of Missing, Presumed Dead. We'll pick up the story there, Bill.
Okay, when about 25 years basically went by with Bob trying to query the government, writing letters with congressmen, trying to get anybody in the Pentagon, the Department of the Army, and his senators, congressmen, anybody who would help him try to find information what happened to Roger, because there was just no word. What he eventually found out with the help of a couple of congressmen at the time was, and with the use of the Freedom of Information Act, which had been passed at that time, were documents that indicated that Roger was in fact a POW in North Korea. And they were returning POWs that said they knew Roger and that they were with Roger when all the POWs were being released at the end of the war during Operation Big Switch. And two of these former POWs said they saw Roger and several others being marched back into the compound as they were being released, and they thought it was just some red tape they had to go through before they were released. 25 years later, when Bob found out these men had been debriefed and mentioned that they knew Roger in the camp, then Bob contacted them, and they were just shocked that Roger never came home. So Bob eventually put together a case with all these documents that proved that Roger was in fact a POW alive when the war ended. The government knew this all along, and they told the family that they never knew anything what happened to Roger. He was just MIA, and since they knew nothing after the war ended, they presumed he was a battlefield casualty.
Now, in other words, basically there was an organized effort on the part of people at the highest levels of government to lie to the family.
It was a very organized effort by the government.
And in fact, they lied not only to you, but all the other POW families too, didn't they?
That's right. There were several lists that were uncovered around that time of POWs that were known to be alive in POW camps when the war ended, and some of those lists are numbered over 1,000. There's a very well-known list called the 389 list, which is a list that lists 389 POWs that the government was pretty much certain they were still alive when the war ended. What has also come out, and it's come out in the news recently, and is that hundreds of these POWs during the war were transferred to the Soviet Union. So these are POWs not even counted by these lists that indicate these POWs were known to be alive around the time the war ended. So these are additional POWs that a Pentagon analyst...
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill DeMott was saying that basically this was his uncle's brother, so this would be, of course, Bill's uncle as well, had gone to Korea during the Korean War to look for his brother, and he couldn't find him, and so after the war he kept trying to find out what had happened to him. Well, the government lied. They had an official policy of lying, as they lie to us today, so they lied about the men who were left behind. And they insisted they were all dead, and they knew they were not. They knew they'd been taken prisoner, and many of them were actually sent to the Soviet Union for experimentation with the full knowledge of the people at the highest levels of our government, who could never experiment on Americans here, but they could let the Russians experiment on them. And as terrible as that may seem, you need to read the book Betrayed, which we carry by Dr. Joe Douglas, who interviewed a colonel, I believe, or a general. I know he was a general in the Czechoslovakian military, who told the story of the terrible things that happened to the American prisoners of war with the full knowledge of our leaders, who did nothing. Much of this is covered in the so-called Helms Committee report, which has been thoroughly suppressed, but it came out from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and we do carry that, and it's available through Radio Liberty. That's the Helms Committee report, and the stories of the men we abandoned in the First World War, in the Second World War, in Korea, and in Vietnam. But we can't let the American people know that, because if we did, it would disillusion a lot of the very brave people who love America and have joined the military to defend it. Men don't mind risking their lives to defend their country. They're not prepared to be betrayed by their country. And this is really the story of what happened in Korea. So pick up the story there. Certainly your uncle found evidence that his brother, what's his brother's name?
His brother's name was Roger.
If Roger then had been alive at the end, they thought he was, in fact, the people were in the Korean prison camp with him, thought that he had come out with him. They just thought they got separated. They never knew he'd been left behind, but there were a number of people who'd been in the prison camp with him, and our government lied, denied that he'd ever been in the prison camp. So pick up the story.
Well, when Bob had all this evidence, he was talking to Senator Strom Thurmond, who was trying to help Bob with his case. He set up a meeting with President Reagan in the early 80s. And so Bob went to the White House, briefly met President Reagan, then was given over to the National Security Advisor, who was former Admiral Bud Nance. And Bob had a very contentious discussion with Admiral Nance for about 90 minutes, and Bob presented his case that, you know, his brother was left behind. And all that Admiral Nance could respond at the end of the meeting was, well, we can't start a war over this. And Bob said, I'm not asking you to start a war. I want you to negotiate. I want our government and the high levels of our government to negotiate with North Korea, to negotiate for these men. There's lots of evidence that some of these guys may even today still be alive in North Korea. What ended up happening was Bob was forced to take his case to federal court in 1982.
In other words, he wanted to get him declared that he had been a prisoner of war, that he was in the hands of the North Koreans. He had not died, as the government wanted everybody to believe. And they kept up this charade of consistently lying and covering up the evidence and then threatening people who knew the truth. So pick up the story there, because this is a really incredible story. The uncle now is going to take to a federal court to try to get the federal government to have to admit that they'd been lying, that Roger was a prisoner of war, and that he was alive and well at the end of the war. So pick up the story there.
Okay, Bob had five former POW witnesses, all willing to testify in court that they knew Roger in the POW camps. And weeks before the trial, these POWs were being visited by government officials. In most cases, it was either FBI agents or Pentagon officers. And they were all warned not to testify.
They were warned not to testify. In other words, don't tell the truth. We don't want the truth out. And how did they threaten them? What did they threaten to do to these men who bravely fought for our country? What did they threaten them with if they did tell the truth?
Well, basically what they told them was that when they left the prison camps and they were debriefed, they were made to take oaths of silence. Not to reveal any information, but really that oath of silence was really supposed to be just in effect until the peace negotiations were cleared up. What had happened in the worst case, one of the only survivors of these POWs, because two of them died of heart attacks after being warned.
And the two of them died. I mean, they're going to go to testify, and not one but two of them die before the trial comes up. So isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, it was quite a coincidence, and especially when they didn't have any history of heart problems or anything. He was a very healthy man. And two of them also became very ill, and they were so ill they couldn't travel to the
courtroom. Isn't that a coincidence? That's four out of the five. Two are dead, two are severely ill, and they can't testify. Why? Well, is it possible that they would do something to these men to keep them from testifying, to keep this case from going to trial, to keep the truth from coming out?
That's absolutely...
That's the only question we can ask, is we weren't there, we don't know, but it is a coincidence that four out of the five were incapable of testifying, but one of them actually did go back to testify, didn't he?
One former POW did testify, and he was flown to the courthouse. He's from Georgia. He was flown, Lloyd Tate is his name. He's still very active in this issue. And he's from Georgia. They flew him up just hours before he was to appear in federal court. And while he was sequestered in a waiting room, waiting to appear on the stand, he was visited by an Army captain from the Pentagon. He was told that if he testified before the court, that information about his mother's past, some damaging information about his mother's past would be made public.
How could anybody support government that would take and threaten an elderly retired veteran that fought valiantly for his country that if he dares to tell the truth when he goes to trial, that they will reveal some scurrilous facts about his mother? I mean, what sort of human beings would do that?
That was just very shocking to hear him tell this story. And his mother had passed away, and what he told the officer was that fact. Is he said, you know, my mother's passed away, you can't harm her, and you're not going to harm me, and why don't you want this truth to come out in federal court? It's not going to hurt anybody. It can only help this situation.
But, of course, they don't want the truth to come out. They've lied to the American people for years, and they classify everything, and they make it top secret. And then if anybody does bring it out, why, of course, they want to put them in prison for telling the truth. I mean, people don't understand the degree of really depravity that exists. So, anyway, he does go to court. He does testify, despite the fact he's been threatened by the government if he tells the truth.
Right. It was pretty brave on his part. He must have known what had happened to the other POWs who wanted to testify and couldn't make it because they were either too ill or they died. But he did testify. He was on the stand for over a couple of hours for most of the afternoon, and he told the story. And he had actually treated a wound that Roger had in the POW camp and told the story, told the conditions, the horrible conditions in the POW camp, and how over half of the POWs died by mistreatment. But by the end of the court trial, the judge said that Bob had proven that Roger was indeed a POW, ordered the Army to reclassify Roger a POW. And it seemed like it was a very short-lived victory because the government very reluctantly reclassified Roger POW, but then they stamped his records with the presumed dead clause once again, and basically, you know, put this issue back under the carpet again.
In other words, it's all an exercise in futility. It accomplished absolutely nothing. Lots of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yes, it's very frustrating, and it's coming back again because even today, the Army casualty officer will admit that Roger was a POW. Now Roger never, or in this case the family, never received Roger's pay while he was a POW. One thing that Bob has been fighting for years is to receive his military pay, which is due to the next of kin for his service while he was a POW. He was a POW for almost 3 years, the government owes the family that money. Now Bob's been dealing with the Army's accounting office in Colorado, and they refuse to acknowledge that Roger was ever POW, even when the Pentagon, the Department of the Army, finally has him listed as a POW but presumed dead. Even though the congressman Rob Simmons in Connecticut wrote a 2-page letter to the Army office saying, "Look, it was proven in federal court. It's Rogers listed as having been a POW, and you should pay the family his back pay." And they just refuse. They refuse they ignore the congressman's letter. They ignore even the classification that's at the U.S. Department of the Army.
All right, fine. So then, of course, what happens at this after this? Now, they get the case won. The government concedes he was a POW. Then they immediately stamp it that he's dead. And so, what has your uncle done since that time? When we get back here in just a few minutes, we'll explore this. Well, they have to understand that it didn't end with Korea. We abandoned literally thousands, probably 1,000 people in Laos. Now, admittedly, they were probably working for the intelligence agencies. They were undercover agents for the CIA, the National Security Agency, but there were certainly many hundreds that we knowingly abandoned in Vietnam. And some of those were taken off to be experimented in Russia, and some of them may still be in Vietnam for all we know. But the one thing is, we can be sure that the government has consistently lied. Henry Kissinger lied. President Roosevelt, President Nixon lied. I could forgive President Nixon for Watergate, but never for abandoning the men that he sent to battle, and he abandoned. Well, pick up the story there, Bill. So then what happened?
So during the court trial, Bob was contacted by ambassadors from the North Korean UN mission in New York, and they had heard about, they had been reading about his court trial, about the POWs, and they called him, invited him to New York. Bob went to New York, met with the North Korean ambassador, and the North Korean ambassador said, you know, we've been trying to negotiate with your government about POWs. We want to put that on the table and want to discuss that. And they haven't had any luck in opening these negotiations. And he asked Bob what they could do about that.
In other words, the thing is, the North Koreans were willing to give the prisoners back, and we didn't want them. And the same thing happened in Korea, in Vietnam. The North Koreans offered to give our men back, but we had promised to give them a great deal of money at the end of the Vietnam War, and we refused to give them the money that Henry Kissinger had promised them. And that's what it was all about. And then, of course, later on, when the North Vietnamese would probably still have given the prisoners back without remuneration, why our leaders made it very clear that they did not want them back. And certainly Senator McCain and Senator Kerry, when they were in charge of the hearings back in the early 1990s on the Vietnam men who were left behind, did everything they could to conceal the truth, to open negotiations for free trade or for open trade with Vietnam, and to destroy the records of the men that were abandoned in Vietnam. And you have to ask yourself, why would they do something like that? Why would they abandon their fellow fighting men to a life of eternal slavery in Vietnam? And it's pretty hard to explain rationally, but if you understand there is evil in the world, and I believe both of these men are consumed by the dark side, then, of course, it all makes sense. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well,
So the Korean ambassador was willing, actually, to said, you know, just would like to negotiate with the Americans, but they won't talk to us. So pick up the story.
Right. So that was an issue. The POW issue was something that the North Koreans could not find any interest in the United States government to negotiate. What finally happened after Bob developed his relationship with the embassy, North Korean embassy, and had recorded actually over 250 phone calls that he had with them, had several meetings. Eventually, he was trying every angle he could come up with. Finally, there was a South Korean businessman who had a connection to Jesse Jackson, and Jackson was running for president in 1987. Jackson got word that North Korea, you know, may still be holding POWs, American POWs, and he thought that would be quite a feather in his cap if he could get some released during his campaign. So Bob set up a meeting with the North Korean ambassador and Jesse Jackson. They met in New York. And during the meeting, Jackson said, if we can come to North Korea on a Christmas Eve trip in 1987, and you would release one POW to us as a good faith effort, and we could continue these negotiations for other POWs. That would be a, you know, a very good thing for both of our countries. And the ambassador agreed to that, to having Bob and Jesse Jackson go to North Korea and negotiate. He wasn't promising anything, but they negotiated for live POWs. And after when the meeting was over, Jesse Jackson called the White House to talk to the Secretary of State James Baker, tell him about the meeting they had about the North Koreans.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, after what had happened was during the hearings, during the trial, why the Korean ambassador to the United Nations, or perhaps the United Nations, actually contacted Bob, who is Bill Dumas's, our guest's uncle, and said, look, you know, we've been trying to negotiate with the American government for the POWs for a long time. The American government will not negotiate to get their prisoners back. So, of course, then Bob tried for some time, had over 250 recorded conversations with the Koreans about the prisoners of war, but our government wasn't interested in them. And then, of course, it was in the 1980s when Jesse Jackson was going to be running for the presidency, and he thought this would be a great thing, a great way of attracting attention to him, if he, Jesse Jackson, that is, and Bob, who is Bill DeMoss's uncle, were to go to North Korea to meet with the Koreans, that they were willing to invite them to come and to talk about releasing one POW. And so then Jesse Jackson actually contacts the White House, talks to James Baker III. Now, this is during the Reagan administration, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
So what happens after that phone conversation, and Bob had actually warned Jesse Jackson not to call James Baker. He said, if you inform the White House of our plan to go to North Korea to negotiate for live American POWs, they will stop it. So what happened was, about 3 days later, Bob got a call from Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. They told him that the meeting was canceled because the State Department put travel sanctions on Americans going to North Korea. They would not allow them to travel to North Korea.
In other words, the last thing they wanted was to get any of the men back again.
And that's right, because that's really the heartbreak of this, is that the government is just not willing to admit that they left the POWs behind. And that the problem that causes, if you don't admit to these POWs having been left behind, then you can't admit to the possibility that some may still be alive over there, and you can't go look for them. You can't ask North Koreans for these POWs back because you don't admit to having left them there to begin with. And that's the conundrum the government is in right now. And unless they think the American people can handle this information that these POWs have been abandoned.
But that is official foreign policy. I mean, we abandon our men. We did it in the First World War. We did it in the Second World War. We did it in Korea. We did it in Vietnam. And I fear that when the Third World War comes, we're going to do it over again. But they can't let the young, idealistic people, and even the people in the military, know that, because they wouldn't want to fight for a government that would betray its own men. And after all, I think it was President Reagan said that any nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its own people. And I think he was absolutely right. Go ahead.
President Reagan was very supportive of this issue. Unfortunately, he was surrounded by people in his cabinet that were very against this issue coming out. I had a few conversations with Ross Perot, and Ross Perot was working directly with Reagan to try to get POW, you know, search for POWs in Southeast Asia to try to get POWs released. And
what did Perot tell you?
Well, he initially had a meeting in the Oval Office with President Reagan, and you know, told the president that there's some strong evidence, there's intelligence reports of POWs still being held in Southeast Asia. President Reagan told Mr. Perot to, you know, put all this information together, come back to the Oval Office and brief him on the information that he had. And Mr. Perot did that again towards the end of Reagan's presidency. And when he had gotten this meeting, he's talking to President Reagan. He said the president was already suffering from the onset of Alzheimer's disease. He said he was actually, you know, had to be reading off of index cards that his staff had prepared for him. Now, his staff was very, very uncooperative of Ross's efforts. And I then found out that there was a memo that went around to the cabinet at that time by Colin Powell, who was the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, which General Powell said, can you imagine what the cost of finding a POW in Southeast Asia at this point would be? Meaning political costs.
And so Colin Powell was really part of the problem as well. He was quite willing to sacrifice the lives of other soldiers, but never his own, of course, or his own political career. So, I mean, unfortunately, there's so much corruption there, but then what would you expect? Colin Powell is a political general, not a fighting general. Member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he's done very well by betraying his fellow fighting men and by betraying America. Rail. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. So you pick up the story there, Bill.
Once the meeting was off with the North Koreans and Jesse Jackson and Bob, it's interesting what could pull Jackson off of this issue, because Jackson refused shortly after that to even talk anymore about the issue. He wouldn't even admit to having that the meeting ever even took place. He would even state that there was no meeting.
Well, of course, Jesse Jackson was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations as well. He was a political opportunist, and I don't think he wanted to, change his relationship with the ruling elite. I mean, he was always sort of the token black bear. He got off time and time again with committing terrible crimes and embezzlement and womanizing, and of course, he's always had a favorable impression. Treatment by the media, I can understand why he wouldn't want to rock the boat. So eventually then he wouldn't have anything more to do with your Uncle Bob?
No, not at all. In fact, I was hoping to get an interview for the documentary. And the odd thing is that even though he can admit that the meeting didn't take place, there are photographs of the meeting, and there was also a letter that he wrote summarizing the entire meeting that he signed, and we have those.
Now you actually have that then?
Yeah, after the meeting, Jesse Jackson wrote the letter, signed it, gave it to Bob to deliver to the North Korean embassy in New York.
And did Bob make a copy of it or what?
Yes, yeah, he very wisely made a copy of it, and we have that, and it's also featured in the documentary.
Okay, I'm sure that Jesse Jackson just very conveniently forgot about that. He probably had an offer that he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure he did. I would like to see what his response would be to the documentary and that story.
I wonder if, Krisha, have you had a chance to get him a copy of the DVD?
Not yet. I hope to soon. We did, through Congressman Ron Paul's office, though, we did get copies of the DVD to every member of Congress and the Senate, and John McCain and John Kerry both have copies.
Well, I would not worry about either one of those. I think they're both traitors to our country, and they certainly were traitors to the men we left behind, because they even went so far as to shred a part of the hearings there, which is Senate hearings. That's a crime, but these people are above the law. And, of course, John McCain is being now touted for the next Republican presidential nominee, John Kerry, I'm sure, will get his reward for his betrayal of the men we left behind as well. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bill Dumas. So, Bill, first of all, I do have a website. Now, we do actually carry the DVD. We think it's an important one. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead. But how can people get in touch with your website and of course, with your work?
Yeah, I will say that your listeners should buy the DVD off your website, because it's actually cheaper on your website than my website. And that's we give a cheaper price for other websites who will carry the DVD, just because we want those people who help us to get some benefit as well. The website for the documentary is missingpresumeddead.com. www.missingpresumeddead.com.
Missingpresumeddead.com. Okay, go ahead.
And there's also information. Our goal right now is to get every congressman to sign, to become co-sponsors of House Resolution 123, which will establish a select committee in Congress to investigate this POW issue. As you know, there have been attempts to do that in the Senate and in Congress in the past, but there's never been certainly a very dedicated and complete investigation into the POW issue. We're hoping that this House resolution gets passed, that finally we will put this issue to rest if it gets fully investigated and followed up.
But, of course, they'll hold their hearings. Nobody will ever read the hearings. It won't get any play in the press. And, of course, everybody will feel better. But in the final analysis, we've done nothing at all about the men who were betrayed, or the realization that this was a carefully coordinated effort at the highest levels of our government to betray our fighting men. And a nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its citizens. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, you got pretty good help from Congressman Ron Paul's office, didn't you?
Yes, he's been very, very helpful, and his aides, and especially Kent Snyder, who's the executive director of Ron Paul's coalition, the Liberty Committee. And what they did was, the end of October this past year, they had a press briefing at Congress and a congressional screening for congressmen, their staff, and for the press. And so we had a held a screening of the documentary, and then after that, during a 2-week period after that, they distributed a DVD, and the cost of the DVD was donated by several POW/MIA organizations and individual donors, and they distributed the DVD to every member of Congress and every member of the Senate, along with a letter urging them to watch the documentary and become co-sponsors of House Resolution 123.
How many of them do you think actually did watch the DVD?
Oh, I don't know. We're trying through several websites of POW/MIA organizations. We're having as many people as we can contact their congressmen and find that out and see how many people are actually watching it.
It's a wonderful DVD. It's a great footage. Where did you get all of that footage? I mean, so many of this was the footage that actually was actually shot at that time by the various newsreel services.
Yeah, I actually spent a lot of time in the National Archives in Maryland and just went through reels. There's just so many reels of information, so many newsreels there, 35-millimeter reels and 60-millimeter reels, and some of it transferred to video.
Will they actually do that right there for you, take the footage that you want?
I was able to bring in your own equipment, so I bring in my own video recording equipment and record it myself. In some cases, some material only the original source is 35-millimeter and it's never been transferred. At that point, you have to go through an approved outside source to have the transfer, which can get very, very costly to do that. The one interesting thing in this whole search was I had been trying to find C-SPAN footage of the 1992 Senate hearings, which really just perpetuated this whole cover-up, actually, as you know very well. And there was, I just couldn't get a hold of these C-SPAN tapes. And finally, by happenstance, I discovered some tapes, VHS tapes, at the National Archives. And I said, yeah, I wonder what these are. They were mislabeled. They weren't logged properly. They weren't in a card catalog. I just said, wow, I wonder what these are. And it turns out they were the C-SPAN tapes.
Now, they're C-SPAN tapes of the hearings, then?
Yes.
In other words, basically, somebody is intentionally concealing the information. Either that or just totally incompetent.
Yeah, and actually, the they finally brought in a head archivist to try to figure out, why that happened, how it could happen. And they were actually very stumped. They had never seen anything like that. Now, I found that kind of at the end of my time doing the research there.
Maybe the Lord wanted you to find it, Doug.
It had to be, because it was just, to be able to find it like that is just, I mean, the odds of that are just unbelievable.
Well, of course, I've had the same sort of stories from many of my friends, that some of the most incredible things, that everything has been done to conceal it, to bury it, to destroy it, and of course, copies mysteriously turn up, and I've even had them sent to me, anonymously, so I would have the information, so we could disseminate it, to the information that they, whoever they are, don't want out.
Yeah, you kind of rely on those kind of things happening, because they're, if I couldn't have gotten that, I don't know, the documentary would have suffered so much, because that's just priceless stuff.
And this is the film footage of John Kerry and John McCain.
Yes, it is, and the other thing is that luckily that was the only session that that C-SPAN actually covered of that. of those hearings. Just it happened to be the one day that was dedicated to the Korean War, which is another that was another odd thing. Why was it just that one day videotaped by C-SPAN? And the interesting thing was, I had a congressional aide from Congressman Candace Miller's office in Michigan, who was very involved in helping me with this project. He went back to National Archives for me to get a dub of a couple of those tapes, which I couldn't get. So he went there, and he said that the people in the dubbing department, they were very suspicious of why he wanted specifically those tapes. Why do you want those tapes? And he said it was very odd. Like, they didn't want to give him those tapes, and he had to say, "Look, I'm a congressional aide. I can have access to those tapes. And I can get a duplicated copy of those tapes. I'm allowed that." But he said he was really given a hard time about it.
And so the thing is that there's this movement all across Washington D.C. to conceal the truth. The last thing they want is the American people to know about the men we abandoned. And it is standard American policy, because there really are dark and sinister forces working at the highest levels of our government. Well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. And then, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thank you. And, Bill, I've been saving it for 15 years, this question of someone in your position. And it's what I've regarded as sort of a fatal mistake of the families of POW MIAs. That is their sort of cowed posture. I mean,
does he have a question, Tom?
Yeah, that is, yes, a very specific one. And I'm trying to understand the psychology and overcome it, this posture where these family groups feel they have to walk on eggshells and not be too demanding of the Pentagon or the White House, lest they cut off the liaisons and refuse to talk to these groups.
All right, fine. That's a good question. Why are the people, the families of the prisoners, why aren't they out demonstrating? Why aren't they trying to awaken the people to the betrayal of the national office, betrayal by people at the highest echelons of government, both Democrat and Republican? Why don't they have the leadership that will be aggressive and use this as an issue to expose the corruption, indeed the very evil, at the highest echelons of government?
That really is a good question. There's a couple things going on there, because I go to the Pentagon update meetings. They have family briefings in Washington once a year and regional ones around the country.
Now, do they fly the families there as a special reward for being quiet and being good?
Exactly. That's exactly what they do. This is quite an operation. It's basically a PR operation. And what they do is they fly the families to Washington, two people for every missing MIA POW. And they entertain them. They just treat them so well. They really sell these families.
Now, we're really here to help you. We're really concerned.
Exactly. They make it seem like they're doing everything they can. It's amazing psychology that they're using. And I'll get up there, and I'll start, throwing the, when they have, after so many hours, they'll have, a question-answer period. And I'm always there, throwing hardball questions at them. And some of the people look at me like, what is he talking about? And they'll come back. They'll come back with a response that just sounds like a campaign speech. And really, they will turn this audience of family members really against this whole notion that POWs are left behind. That what do you mean this evidence? And they'll debunk any bit of evidence that you present to them. So the Pentagon POW MIA office works very, very hard to keep the families in line. And so a lot of it is just that. You get a majority of the families that just, most of the families, they know that their loved ones have died and their bodies are buried somewhere in North Korea or Southeast Asia, and they just want to get the bodies back. The notion that the POWs were abandoned, and that that people like me that are there are trying to deal with the live POW issue. To them, for the most part, they just don't believe it. That's part of what's going on. The other part is there are several different organizations, POWMA or family organizations, and they pretty much compete with one. Rather than working together, they compete with one another, and they don't form this very united front that could have some chance against the forces of the government. And I really think there have been accusations that the government has actually seated members in these organizations to purposefully.
I'm sure they have. I'm sure they've actually taken over those organizations. They've got their people into key positions to pat the families on the head. Everything's fine. Believe me, we're from the government. We're just so concerned about your loved ones. And the truth of the matter is they want to keep them quiet. The last thing they want is for the American people to hear your story. Anything else, Roger?
Well, presumably 15, 20 years ago, they weren't just turning out for a free lunch.
No.
They were hoping against hope, and that's what the psychology.
They've worn them down, and basically they've convinced them. But their leadership, you see, the leadership of these POW organizations many times is on the other side, and that is the standard technique. You take over the opposition, you infiltrate it with the most patriotic sort of people, but they're really there to betray the families of the men we left behind. Thanks so much, Roger. And that's our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I think that Roger's question is very apropos and very important.
Yeah, there are family members that had been just fighting this battle for a long time. And Roger said, yeah, you know 11, 12, 15 years ago, whatever.
You're really talking almost 50 years since the Korean War ended.
Right.
55
right.
years now. 50, yeah. No, but 50, it's about 50 years now.
And it really is, a lot of that is just being worn down. And like in the case of my uncle Bob, he's been fighting this for more than 53, 54, 55 years, and he's still at it. I mean, it's still his daily thing, but a lot of other people just don't have that kind of stamina, and you get to the point where they just wear you down, and you just feel like you've got to move on, you just can't go on.
And I think, though, that they do threaten some people. I had a widow of a man who was lost in Vietnam who's really been fighting this battle, and she, of course, wrote a book recently, and it was really quite a good book. I had her on one time, and I tried to get her on again, and she wouldn't come on, and she let me know that she'd been threatened. Now, this is within the last 3 or 4 months.
Well, I've also when I talked to the Tracy Utrey, who was on Helms's committee that did the investigation and wrote the Helms report. He was saying that people involved in the POWMA issue get audited by the IRS at a much higher rate than the average American. You know, so that's just, they have these ways. And when he testified before the Senate Select Panel, it was after that he couldn't even get a job anymore in Washington. He was, he was fired from most of that staff was fired.
I know one of them went over to become the editor of Insight magazine, which was really one of the best conservative magazines we had until they started telling the truth about what happened on 9/11, and suddenly all of their advertisers disappeared. Now, of course, you have a news magazine, you have to have advertisers, and somebody got all of the advertisers to pull their advertisements, and guess what happened to Insight magazine? And the fellow was chief of staff there, who for Jesse Helms, who had actually instrumental in really writing that report, of course now he was out of a job again. So this is what they do, and of course you tell the truth, they're going to target you. People find it hard to believe this really goes on, and in America, don't they, Bill? Wasn't this sort of a disillusioning thing when you finally realized the truth?
Yeah, it really was. And when I showed rough cuts to audiences, and I was showing a 2-hour version of the film, and as I was editing this, just to see what audience response would be, I would show it to very mixed audiences. At an art festival, I showed it to an audience during the last Democratic primary. So I was showing it to an audience that was primarily a very liberal audience. And at the end of the film, they were just stunned. I mean, they were just angry, and they said, you know what, this is unbelievable. What's being done about this? You know, how do we stop this? And it's funny, I talked to several people afterwards, and they said, well, I could never vote for John Kerry. I was going to vote for John Kerry in a primary, but I couldn't think of voting for him.
So they voted for George Bush, who was cut from the same bolt of cloth. They both belong to the same secret society. But, of course, we can't let the American people know that. We can't let them know that the leaders of both political parties are controlled by exactly the same people. That would be just too overwhelming to accept. Because it would mean that most of what we believe just isn't true. We're going to be back in just a moment with Bill Dumas to finish up this evening's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Bill Dumas. Go ahead, Bill. You got about 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program.
Okay. The other thing I was going to talk about is how the mainstream press has kept their hands off of this issue, even though there were moments when they got involved, such as when Bob was in his court case. Morton Dean from was at CBS at the time came down and covered the trial. He spent an afternoon at Bob's house. They put together quite a story, a feature story that was going to be in the evening news that night, and it just got squashed.
They can't let the American people know that, because who would want to go off and fight for a government that would betray them and would leave their sons and daughters behind?
Yeah, and I think that's really, really the fear. What will this do to the morale of the current forces in Iraq and Afghanistan if they know that if they get captured, they will not be bargained for, and that's really what it comes down to. The government refuses to bargain.
And of course, this old idea, we never leave our men behind. Well, if it were left up to the soldiers, that would be the case. But you see, if you leave it up to people like, well, our elite, like Henry Kissinger, who in the book "Kiss the Final Days" is quoted as saying, you know, our soldiers are simply stupid, dumb animals to use for foreign policy purposes. And if you'd like to see those pages from this book, the book by Woodward and Bernstein, we'll be glad to send it to you. This is the attitude, the real attitude towards our fighting men. Oh, we just love our fighting men. They're so brave and courageous. No, they look upon them as stupid, dumb animals. They really have no compassion because the leaders, of course, have a different God. They have a different world vision. They have a different goal. And, of course, our fighting men are used, but only to advance their goal. And it has nothing to do with saving America. It has to do with the New World Order, the New World Religion, and wars are such a convenient diversion to keep us from seeing what's really going on here at home. Well, Bill, simply wrap up the program. You've got about 30 seconds.
Okay, I just want to say that this issue is not like a historic issue as well. I'm certain there are still live Americans in North Korea for sure, and most likely in Southeast Asia. And right now, there actually is a POW in Iraq, Matt Maupin, and the government tried to take the POW label away from him, and they came up with another label, which they called Missing Captured, because they didn't want the stigma of a POW attached to a soldier that's in Iraq right now. When his father, Keith...
Right, we're out of time, Bill. We'll talk about it next time. Well, they've got still Bob here. Bill, why don't you tell us about this POW that they're covering up in Iraq? Is he still alive or has he been executed?
There's no evidence that he was executed or never received any tape or anything that he was executed. The last they knew that he was captured, he was seen in a videotape being captured. His name is Matt Maupin. The government listed him as a POW, then decided to call him missing captured because they said it's the Geneva Convention. The POW term is an international term, and Geneva Convention, a more domestic term, is missing captured. But basically, they don't want the stigma of the United States having a POW in Iraq. And his father went along with that explanation until he saw the documentary my documentary, Missing, Presumed Dead, and now he had no idea that POWs were left behind.
Well, I think we've got to get the message out. We'll do everything we can to help you. Certainly Monica Jensen Stevenson tried to do that with her book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and of course they pulled that one off the shelves. You couldn't buy it anyplace. They republished it in Canada. Somebody accidentally destroyed 5,000 copies. She wrote another other book called Spite House about the POW war issue. She got sued over that one. Of course, the provision was they stopped publishing the book. This is how it's done. Well, Bill's got a great product here. His DVD, Missing, Presumed Dead, is something everybody should see, understand what we're up against, understand these are our sons and daughters, and they're being betrayed by the dark spiritual forces in charge. Bill, good night, God bless, and we'll look forward to having you on again real soon.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, it's always a pleasure to have Bill Dumas on and to... Well, it's not nice to talk about it, but if you haven't read the book Betrayed, you really need to. We have a great four-tape set with my interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson called The Men We Left Behind. And then we have another four-tape set, One Man Returned, the story of Barbie Garwood. And of course, our four-tape set on Vietnam. The information you're not going to get elsewhere to understand what these wars are about. Of course, my talk on Iraq, the untold story, goes into the fact that all of the wars of the last century were totally contrived. There's a syllabus that goes with that. The information is all available. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and understand behind everything that's going on today is a spiritual battle. It's an age-old spiritual battle. It was described on the Mount of Temptation when our Lord addressed the devil, and the devil said, "If you'll simply fall down and worship me, I can give you all the kingdoms of the world." Was the devil lying at the time? Of course not. He controlled the kingdoms of the world at that time. He controls the kingdoms of the world at this time. And unless you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, we're involved in a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And we're not doing very well because most people don't even know the battle is going on. We hope many of you out there will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.